Well, first of all, there's something that we just can't miss, and that's the fact that the eyewitnesses to the life of Jesus. And remember, Luke prefaced his whole account of the life and mission of Jesus by saying, man, he did his homework. Luke, a historian of the first rank, he did his homework. He accumulated all of the eyewitness accounts so that he would set in order perfectly the things pertaining to the life and mission of Jesus. And so we need to see that the eyewitnesses to the life of Jesus that communicated these things to Luke, they were struck by the fact that the last thing Jesus did at the temple was to watch people. That's the last thing he was doing there. He watched people, and he watched people in the act of giving. And they remembered, as they were there, seeing who it was that Jesus was watching. And they remembered that Jesus noticed what they gave and how they were giving. And they were struck by the fact that the last words Jesus would speak on the Temple Mount had to do with those who were giving, what they gave, and how they gave. Everything Jesus did over the course of his public ministry, about 3 years, was always deliberate. You know, one of the words we use a lot in our vernacular now is intentional, right? He was divinely intentional. Jesus said that he only said what the Father gave him to say. He says, I only do what the Father tells me to do. And we find time and again in the four Gospels that Jesus references the fact, or the Gospel writers mention the fact that his hour had not yet come, speaking of the time that he would die in our place for our sins. So he had a divinely assembled agenda, and he was on a timeline, and he stayed within it perfectly. And so, being so deliberate, it begs the question, why choose his final moments at the temple to watch giving and talk about giving? We've all heard the saying, money speaks, right? And when we say that, we think of the way money can influence people, influence outcomes. But the saying money speaks is true in a way that most people haven't considered. And I think it's tied to why Jesus would choose his final moments at the temple to watch people as they gave and to talk about what and how they gave. Money speaks about the state of the heart as few other things can. Jesus said this in Matthew 6:21, for where your treasure is, there your heart will also be. What Jesus did and what Jesus said in the temple treasury, and I think we really need to keep this in mind, because we've skipped a few events and a few things that Jesus has said to get here. We're trying to move forward to where we're going to be in Luke's gospel at the week before his death, and then into his resurrection by the time we get to Easter this year. So what Jesus did and said in the temple treasury stands against the background of what he had just said at the close of chapter 20. And you might want to look up in backwards into Luke chapter 20, and I'll have it up here on the screen for us as well. In verse 45, it says this, and in the hearing of all the people, he said this to his disciples. So he was very open about this. He says, beware of the scribes, who like to walk around in long robes and love greetings in the marketplaces and the best seats in the synagogues and the places of honor at feasts. And then here's the key, who devour widows' houses. That's the backdrop for what we're going to see Jesus do and what we're going to see Jesus say. Jesus wanted his followers to know what love for God looked like. He wanted them to know what real worship looked like. And he did it by way of setting the life of one poor widow in contrast to the hypocrites, the religious leaders who got rich off of widows. Jesus is so brilliant in the way he teaches and in the things that he does. So let's start with Luke telling us where Jesus was. In verse 1, Jesus looked up and saw the rich putting their gifts into the offering box. So we have a specific, a geographical context, right? A location. This would have taken place in what was called the temple treasury. There in the temple treasury, there were 13 brass treasure chests. And these were called trumpets because they looked like inverted horns. They were narrow at the top, large at the bottom. And according to the written collection of Jewish oral traditions that's known as the Mishnah, there is a direct reference there to these 13 trumpets. Each of them were they bore an inscription, and each of those trumpets, the inscription designated what the offerings were for. So you would go and you would drop your offering into a specific treasure chest, a specific trumpet. Some were titled or given the designation new shekel dues. Some were titled or given the designation as wood, right? Wood for the offerings to burn. Frankincense, gold for the mercy seat. Six of them were labeled free will offerings, right? So that's where Jesus was. And then Luke tells us what Jesus was doing. It says, Jesus looked up and saw the rich putting their gifts into the offering box. And he saw a poor widow put in two small copper coins. Have you ever sat at an airport and just watched people? It's fascinating. It's a trip. And depending on which airport you're at, especially if you get out of the country and you're at big international hubs, it's really, really fascinating and sometimes really intriguing, man. You start thinking about people and what's moving them and how do they get there. And, well, Jesus, he's the great observer. I don't know if you've noticed, but as we've been going through Matthew's gospel in the Bible bus here in the month of January, there's several times where we read the phrase, Jesus saw the crowds. Or Jesus saw people in need, right? Well, Luke tells us that on his last visit to the temple, Jesus had a specific location and a specific crowd that he wanted to watch. He watched the givers. None of them had any idea that they were being watched by God who had become man. He was just in the massive crowds of Passover on the Temple Mount, there in the treasury of the temple, one of a sea of faces. And no one had any idea that one of those faces in that sea of faces on the Temple Mount during the week of Passover was God incarnate. And I think that's so incredibly relevant to us this morning because you and I, we're being watched all the time. We're being watched by God. Even when we're not conscious of it. As Christians, we believe that he sees everything, that he's watching everything, but we're not always thinking about that. We're not always conscious of it, but he is watching. Every action and the motive behind every action is seen and known by the one to whom we will give an account. So, where Jesus was, what Jesus was doing, and then Luke tells us what Jesus saw. What did he see as he watched the worshipers make their deposits? Well, first it says he saw the rich putting their gifts in the offering box. Now, we want to be very careful to not read into texts, right? Exegesis is pulling out of a passage what is there in the language. Eisegesis is reading into the text something that isn't there. We're trying to make the passage say things. And so we want to be careful to not read into this that Jesus disapproved of all the offerings of all those who were rich at all. But we can come to some conclusions in looking at the passage as a whole that there was much wrong with the why they gave and with the what they gave because he sets this other woman up in juxtaposition to them. Jesus spoke to this reality about what can be wrong in our worship, what can be wrong when we are giving in the Sermon on the Mount. I'm going to read Matthew 6, verse 1 from the Message. It's up here on the screen. Be especially careful when you are trying to be good so that you don't make a performance out of it. Now, here's Jesus. The Sermon on the Mount, it's the manifesto of his kingdom. He's saying, here, if you want to know what the citizen of the kingdom looks like, this is it. If you want to know what life looks like in my kingdom, this is it. And in speaking to his disciples, the Sermon on the Mount is a message to the disciples. It says his disciples, he went up onto the side of this mountain, and the people came up to him, and when they came to him, he began to teach them, his disciples. And so he's saying to his disciples that there's things that as his disciples, as citizens in his kingdom, we need to be careful about. So that when we're trying to be good, which we ought to as citizens, how we live as citizens in his kingdom, so that while we're doing good things like worship, like giving, that we don't make a performance out of it. Have you ever thought about what would happen to the great charitable organizations today if there weren't celebrity fundraising events? You know, where people pay thousands of dollars for a plate of dinner. They arrive in expensive cars wearing thousands of dollars of clothes and jewelry to be a part of this fundraising event. What would it be like if there was just like, no, we're not doing that. We just would like you to give. Or if there was no recognition of those who gave. Think about hospital lobbies or universities where you see plaques and lists of names and pictures of donors holding three-foot long checks, right? That were donated to those things. Jesus had to make it a point to tell the citizens of his kingdom that worship is not a spectator event. Again, Matthew 6:1. Be especially careful when you're trying to be good so that you don't make a performance out of it. All these people making a regular show out of their prayers. So there was a lot of people making a show out of their worship. Because worship is intimate. Worship is vertical. And even in a corporate context, like a Sunday morning or a Monday night, even in a corporate context, worship is still intimate and still vertical. There was in the day of Jesus, and there still are today, a lot of spectators when people gather to worship. Now, the temple treasury would have been especially crowded on that day in Luke chapter 21 because it's the week of Passover. And no doubt the Passover crowd would have been oohing and aahing over the generosity of the rich, but Jesus wasn't. Again, the words of Jesus in Matthew 6:1, be especially careful when you're trying to be good so that you don't make a performance out of it. It might be good theater, but the God who made you won't be applauding. So Jesus wasn't impressed by what the rich people could put in and of the act itself. But as Jesus watched, he noticed someone and noticed something that did make his heart applaud. I think in his heart he actually gave a standing ovation. Verse 2, he saw a poor widow. Because the life of widows in biblical times was hard. And virtually everyone there in the temple treasury would have known that she was a widow because widows actually wore distinctive clothing. And Jesus made it clear just how poor she was. In verse 2, he used the specific word that meant destitute, poor enough to need help. In verse 3, he used a different word that implies the sense of being continuously destitute. So they would have known her by her apparel to be a widow. And Jesus says, oh, she was poor enough to need help, and she was continuously in that state. And it says, he saw a poor widow put in two small copper coins. So here this woman, her offering was two copper coins. Now those copper coins were so small, so thin, that they were called lepta, literally peeled or fine. They were thin. They were light. This tiny thin coin was worth only 1/400th of a shekel. That's how light it was. In our economy, about 1/8 of one penny. In the day of Jesus, a lepta was 1% of a day's wage. You needed, in reality, 100 times more per day just to eke out a living. In first century Jewish economy, this widow's two lepta represented about zero. And again, Jesus saw this widow's gift against the backdrop of the greed of the scribes, the religious influencers who were devouring widows' houses, preying off of women like this woman. So where Jesus was, what Jesus was doing, what Jesus saw, and Luke tells us what Jesus said. And he said, truly, I tell you, this poor widow, this one who is continually in the state of being destitute, has put in more than all of them. For they all contribute out of their abundance, but she, out of her poverty, put in all she had to live on. Jesus not only took note of the act of giving, he was assessing motive. So Jesus gets to go someplace we don't get to go. Because motive is heart stuff, right? And I can't know your heart. I can see things connected to your heart and the way you act, but I really don't know your motive in it. Jesus is the knower of hearts. And Jesus is, he wants us to know. Now remember, this is last stuff. This is last actions, last words. This is important stuff. He wanted us to know that this poor widow was actually living out the Shema. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 4 and 5. Hear, O Israel, or in the Hebrew, it's Shema Israel. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. Here, Jesus said, this woman was loving God with all that she was and with all that she had. When she slipped her two coins into the mouth of the trumpet, they were so thin and had so little weight that they wouldn't have even made a sound when they landed on the shekels. In reality, the temple was no richer because of her gift, but she was beyond calculation poorer because she gave all. She didn't make the temple any richer, but she became immeasurably poorer. Everyone else in the temple treasury saw rich people giving. Jesus saw a poor widow sacrificing. I don't know if you've ever heard the story of the chicken and the pig. You know, it sounds like one of those bar jokes. Hey, did you hear the one about the chicken and the pig? Right? A pig and a chicken, they were out looking for work, and they saw a church sign advertising a breakfast that was going to be held in a few days. And at the bottom of the sign, it read, help needed to serve breakfast with ham and eggs. Apply for job here. And so the chicken turned to the pig and said, hey, let's help out. I'll give a few eggs. And the pig said, yeah, yours is only a contribution. Mine's a sacrifice. Right? We so often think of giving in terms of how much. Jesus sees giving in terms of how much is left. She gave everything. Without a word, she was saying to God, God, I love you. Here's my heart. Here's my life. It's not much. It's all I have. But it's all yours. Now, I have to tell you that I think that what made her different from the religious guys who were devouring widows' homes and houses and her is that she really, really knew the Lord. They knew about him, but she knew him. And because she knew him, she loved him. She really trusted him. And because she really trusted him, she really believed that the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob had revealed himself in such a way that he would say, with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And she's going, why wouldn't I love you with all my heart, soul, mind, and strength? Look at her. She had nothing to fall back on, nothing to rely on. We could literally say she gave away her next meal. She was left with no more resources. And yet she gave it to the God of all creation. Isn't that amazing? And the God of all creation had become man, and he took notice. You know, Jesus has his own system of scales and weights. He knew the exact contents of those 13 trumpet-shaped chests. He knew the exact number of shekels, the exact number of denarii. He knew exactly the weight of the heavy gold and the silver in each of them, and all of them summed up. And all of that was placed on one side of his heavenly scale, and on the other side, he placed the two paper-thin copper coins. And on his divinely calibrated scales, the massive load of what the rich had given gave way to the eternal weight of this widow's tiny offering. Hers shifted the scales. John Calvin said this, "For with God, it rates less for a rich man to give a moderate sum from a large mass than for a poor man to exhaust himself in paying out something very small." The Last Supper and the cross were looming before Jesus, and yet he goes out of his way to spend these moments in this place because he wants us to know what caught his eye there. Jesus watched the rich give, and yet there was something in what this widow gave and how she gave that was important for us to know. By way of this widow, Jesus shows us what he values in worship, what he values in our giving. First, when it comes to giving of any kind, this isn't just about finances. This is about time, talent, treasure. God sees the heart. He weighs our motivation. How many of you have had to write checks to the IRS before? Raise your hand. Yeah. When I write a check to the IRS, or, you know, now when I make my electronic payment, the IRS could not care less about how I felt writing that check. Doesn't care if I give willingly or grudgingly, joyfully or painfully. All the IRS cares about is, give me your money. God cares. God wants our hearts. 1 Corinthians 13:3, if I give away all I have, and if I delivered up my body to be burned, but have not love, I gain nothing. Heart matters. Secondly, giving that pleases God is giving that costs us. You know, centuries earlier, King David exemplifies this on the very spot where Jesus watched this widow worship God. You know, David wanted the threshing floor of a Jebusite named Arauna so that he could build an altar to God there, and he needed animals as well to sacrifice there. And this guy, this Jebusite, he wanted to just give them all to King David. And here's what David said to his offer. 2 Samuel 24, verse 24, he says, "No, but I will buy it from you for a price. I will not offer burnt offerings to the Lord my God that cost me nothing." You know what? The threshing floor of that Jebusite man was the very spot on which Solomon would build his temple. It was the very piece of real estate that Jesus was standing on. The very spot where this poor widow gave her last two copper coins. Giving that costs us is giving that pleases God. And just drop this into life. Drop it into your marriage. Drop it into your family. Drop it into church. Think about it. Like, okay, so this is a big football weekend, right? Pretty big one. Well, when there's not a football game on or one that you really don't want to watch, it's easy to give your wife the remote. Right? What's the cost? Let her watch her favorite program. Or apply that to giving time or talents in serving God's people. You might think, I only have two copper coins of time. Man, I am stretched so thin with all of my time. I don't have hours and hours to give. I don't have free time like other people have free time. Man, I don't have any discretionary time, man. I got none. I've got just these two little thin slices of time. Well, Jesus says, that's awesome. You giving those two little thin slices of time, that if you drop those little bits of time into the trumpet of what everybody else has put in hours, you might think you wouldn't even hear your time strike that collection of time at the bottom of that, but Jesus is going, oh, that's a standing ovation. Or you might feel that you only have 2 copper coins worth of talent. Well, I'm just not very good at anything. I don't know what I could do. But I'll give what I have to serve God and to serve God's people. Apply that to underwriting the preaching and teaching of the gospel. You might feel like you literally only have 2 copper coins to give. But that's exactly the point that Jesus is communicating to us. Whatever the economy is, whatever the medium of exchange is, if you would, whatever the currency is, I think that'd be more accurate. It's not how much, it's what's left over. C.S. Lewis said this, "There ought to be things we should like to do and cannot do because our charitable expenditures excludes them." You know, I want you guys to know that anytime I ever stand before you to teach, I'm getting preached at all week long in preparing. And I had to do a whole lot of inventory. And it's that quote by Lewis, it's like, well, there should be things that I'd like to do but can't do because I gave to something else. That's not an arm twist. That's not a, you know, somebody's got you, like in wrestling, somebody's got you in a really nasty position wanting you to just give. It's just the love of Christ constrain us when it comes to our time and talents and treasures. Third thing is that Jesus wants us to see in this woman that God can do great things with tiny things. I mean, immediately what comes to mind is the little boy with just the few loaves and fish, right? And how God took it and multiplied it. So many times when we pray for our worship and giving, I will pray specifically, and Lord, would you multiply these gifts? Would you just get the you have a divine economy with these gifts. You're going to get so much more out of them than what we actually put in your hands. And that's what he does with our lives. Think of it. This widow's gift, 1/8 of a penny. In our economy, 1% of a day's wage in first century Israel, given as a love gift to God, that woman's gift, those 2 thin little coins, has produced more for the kingdom of God and the advance of the gospel over the 2,000 years after this moment in Luke 21 than we could ever calculate, right? This woman, those 2 little coins, the heart behind the giving of those coins, have challenged and liberated countless men and women to give from their little or to give from their much. And that's why Jesus deliberately wanted to say, you know, the last thing I want to do and the last things I want to say is going to be on this place about this stuff. Jesus taking note of this woman, taking note of what she gave and how she gave, has turned those 2 thin coins into the giving of time, talent, and treasure that only eternity can calculate. And then think about this. One day, Jesus is going to say to that lady, I saw you do that. How awesome is that? Guys, not the least bit of sacrificial giving and service is forgotten by Jesus. None of it. But there's even more here. The sight of this widow putting in all that she had to live on, that's what Jesus said about her. She put in all that she had to live on. This was not lost on Jesus because literally he's going to go from the temple. He's going to leave it for the last time. And he's literally now moving in hours, not days, not weeks, not months, not years. He's moving in hours now towards standing before Pilate. And then carrying his cross to the place called Calvary outside of the walls of the city where he would give all that he had to redeem and rescue rebels like you and me. Lastly, when it comes to giving, God's an equal opportunity employer. Anyone, poor or rich, uneducated or educated, unknown or known, can give. Anyone. When it comes to giving, the question is not, well, who do you know, or how much have you accomplished, or how much do you have? When it comes to giving, the question is, and remember, this just isn't a, I prayed this morning specifically, and I asked the guys last night. I had to stay home last night. Valerie's going out of town today. I wanted to spend the last evening at home with her last night, and so I didn't come to prayer, but I said, please pray that when we get to this passage, and as it's being read, that people just don't shut down and tune out. It's like, oh, here we go. It's about giving. Or to think like this is some campaign about giving. No, this is just about heart. When it comes to giving, the question is, how? How do we give? Whether it's that time that your wife is asking you to give, how do you give it? Your wife's got the honey-do list. And you're calculating time, how much time you've been spending doing things, how much time you still need to spend on things, and then you have this request to come in. How do you give that time to your wife? How? Not just do you, but how do you? How do you give? Grudgingly or willingly? Does our giving cost us anything? And before I close, I want to move from thinking about giving on the personal level to thinking about giving in terms of the local church. How's a local church, like this collection, this gathering, this ecclesia of sinners saved by Jesus into this community of believers, how should we as a community of believers, is it possible for a local church to love and to give like this widow? Well, we see this actually in real life in the first century church. Paul told the Corinthians this. I'm going to put it up here for you. It's 2 Corinthians 8, verses 1 through 5. He says, we want you to know, brothers, about the grace of God that has been given among the churches of Macedonia. For in a severe test of affliction, their abundance of joy and their extreme poverty have overflowed in a wealth of generosity on their part. For they gave according to their means, as I can testify, and beyond their means, of their own accord, begging us earnestly for the favor of taking part in the relief of the saints. And this, not as we expected, but they gave themselves first to the Lord, and then by the will of God, to us. You see, this woman had given herself to the Lord. We can, as a church, give. We can, as a church, give ourselves. God doesn't want our money. He wants us. And yet, in a very real way, it's impossible to give ourselves to him apart from our time, our talent, and our treasure, right? Like, well, I say, okay, God, you've got me. What does that mean? What does it mean to have me? Because I'm somebody that's been fearfully and wonderfully made. I'm God's by creation, and then I'm his by redemption, and he is woven into me things. And he's given me time, he's given me certain talents, and he's given to me certain treasures. It's impossible for me to give myself to him apart from giving to him my time, my talent, and my treasure. It is true that money speaks. It tells us where our heart is. And so here's the question. What does our giving say about us? And in a very real way, although I'd say this figuratively, Jesus is still sitting across from the treasury of every church, and he's watching. He's watching us as individuals, and he's watching us as a local church. And what's he seeing? What's he seeing in Richard Cimino? What's he seeing in Metro?